Dear listeners, please join me in welcoming Ita Yoda, an artistic duo using different techniques and merging different matters and ideas, who spend their 1 month residency at Rupert in Vilnius to focus on their new sculptural and collaborative work created in correspondence with the participants of the Alternative Education Program at Rupert, to be presented shortly after in the exhibition No History of Its Own at AP's Gallery here in the center of Vilnius.
You're using different techniques as artists. You're quite active in different matters, and you're using CGI and you're using virtual reality to create immersive spaces for your works. And it seems like the shapes you've been creating are somehow suspended between what is artificial, what is real, natural, organic, bodily. The materials are sometimes quite odd, if I could put it this way. And I wanted to maybe ask you about the beginning of how it started, how you started working as a duo, because Virgil, you studied at the Royal College of Art at the sculpture department, and Kai as well at the photography and video department. Could you tell us something about the beginning?
I graduated from the photography and video in 2011, and then I got a grant from the Culture Ministry of Japan, and I wanted to shift from 2D work into 3D work. And I was doing already like photo and video installation, but I was documenting like an installation into a photographic medium, and people were saying like, oh, why don't you show the installation itself rather than showing the photographic documentation of the installation. So then I tried to make the installation myself, but then I realized quite quickly that it's very different to make two-dimensional work and three-dimensional work, because the three-dimensional work has to stay standing for quite a long period of time. So then I had the idea to find someone to help me to realize this project. So I put an advert online in maybe four or five different universities and some other website, and I had maybe about 1,500 people applying. And then I did the interview with maybe like 30 people. And then Virginia was one of the people who applied to this advert that I put out. And then it's how we met. And we started working together like this for a few months. And then we started to share like the studio. And we made like I made the transition from the 2D into the 3D. Mm-hmm. And then I think we influenced each other's work quite a lot without realizing so much. So each time we had like a curator come in for a studio visit, they would, for me or for Virgil, and then they would see like the other person's work in the studio, and they would propose us like a duo show or like a group show as a duo artist to put our work next to each other. So it's how we started to create the work quite organically. And then we had a group show in Romania at the Nicodim Gallery. And the first night, the curator in the gallery said to us, hey guys, like, you're not so young anymore. You should just focus on your duo. It's much more relevant to this time. It's much more interesting for us. So just do it for 2 years. And if you fail, you can go backwards and go back to your individual practice. But you don't have time now to do both. You don't have time to do your individual and your duo practice, because that was what else you were doing. And we thought it's fine to do that. But they said, no way, you don't have time. Just focus on one thing. If not, you're going to fail everything. So we were like, oh, wow, okay, that's quite a big statement. You just met you for the first time, you're saying this. But then we went back to London, and then we thought about the whole thing. And then we decided, let's try it for 2 years. So we created this name, Ita Yoda, which is like both our surnames. We made like our website, and then we started making paintings, actually. So we started by making paintings together. So we were making transparent screens, dripping or like pouring or like scraping silicone and resin and screen printing medium with different kind of pigments. So we were doing the painting without using a brush, but with like a spatula or like spraying and pouring this kind of thing. And then we put all these transparent screens with the paint on top inside the studio. So maybe we had like 20 screens or 50 screens. And then we would put the transparent screens on in front of each other to create like an assemblage, and then we would like play around like this for a few days, and then we would be like, oh, this is a good one. So it's how we started to create the first collaborative work. So that's like the starting point. And then we made like some physical sculptures together, but then one person would come in and then maybe cut off like some part of the sculpture. And then the other person would come in the next day and then they'll be so pissed off or sad or whatever, because it's really difficult to go backwards when it's physical. And then, so we understood quite quickly that we can't continue to create the same physical sculpture like this. It didn't work out for us. And then we had a friend who was making sculpture digitally and then transforming that into a physical world. And then we thought, oh, if we edit like the digital sculptural form, then we can save the file, we can go backwards, we have less problem, it's much more maybe collaborative. So it's how we started doing the digital sculptures, and then to 3D print it, and then to cast it into a different material. So that was like the starting point of making the sculptures together. Mm-hmm. And then we met Croatian sisters, a duo. I found them on Instagram, and we wanted to create like a video painting as a continuation of the first transparent paintings that we were making. And they were making amazing animations. And I was following them on Instagram for a while, and then suddenly they put a post on Instagram that they're looking for people to participate in the VR residency. And I didn't know much about VR, and I was like, oh, I don't want to put this headset, but let's try. So we went, we applied, and they accepted us, and we went there. And then we realized all these digital sculptural forms we created, we can just throw them into the VR and then stretch them or expand them or transform them or give them like a movement and create like a three-dimensional world with the sculptures, regardless of the scale. So everything is like interchangeable and you can go through the sculptures, you can explore it inside out. So we said, oh, that's much more interesting than a video. It feels very natural. It's also interactive. And it's how we started this practice of installation, mixing sculptures, physical sculptures with virtual reality, where there's a dialogue in between the both things. And this was maybe 2 years ago, 2018. And we had our first duo solo show in Tokyo. And now what we're doing is like a development from this point.
But what I can add is that at first we wanted, our first desire in the installation is to challenge new way of installation and to involve the viewer as an active participant. So to change the relation artist-public, and also to develop the system of quasi-object. So to not have some passive sculpture, but some sculpture that are responding and active to the public. And we found, we wanted some transparent LED screen. So first we found this transparent LED screen, and it's a lot about transparency that is highly present in our work. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot about the disappearance of the boundary that we are experiencing right now with internet and social media. So for us, that was important. And we found the supplier in Aarhus in Denmark for this LED screen, and we thought, but how we can we involve a viewer as an active participant? And it's when then this VR came out, open call, and we thought, okay, let's try. And when we tried the first time VR in Croatia, we felt that's the tool that we can use to involve the public as part as our work and producing our work. So we really consider new technology as a tool, as it could be casting or metalworking.
You're speaking of the transparency, and you're mentioning also that you're interested in how these materials can kind of evolve associations with the digital world and how we're connecting with each other today. But I think it's also interesting to look at your work and see the kind of signature features of your works. The sculptural objects you're creating are very sensual, and you feel almost as if you wanted to touch them. They are so haptic, so interesting in that sense. And you were using a lot of kind of fossil materials like polyurethane, resin, silicone, but also glass. And it seems that more of your recent work shows that you look to work more with some more organic or ecological materials. And I wanted to ask you about, I guess you might have thought about this since some time already. Maybe I should ask you what made you change this this approach, and how do you mm-hmm. how do you feel now? Maybe Rupert is also informing your practice, like the area of Valle Campeche, the kind of nature that's around here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. So it really came organically, actually. 2 years ago, when we started our residency at the Cité des Arts in Paris, very quickly, when we had studio visits with a French curator or foreign curator but based in France, they quickly, all of them asked us, how do we feel about using toxic material in an era where ecological consciousness and we are all aware about climate changing, and it's something we never thought or questioned ourselves about, because this question never have been raised in Berlin, where we used to live, or in London. And after 1, 2, 3 curators asking us, we felt, okay, we need, if we want to develop our career in France, and also we are thinking about the future, we need to question ourselves about it, especially because we try to challenge new way of installation and to put the public in the center of our practice. But we were still working with material like artists decades ago. So, and also I became allergic to the polyurethane resin. So, and I'm a vegetarian. So for us, all this direction to go to ecological organic material was really making sense. So then we decided to shift all the polyurethane transparent resin production to glass, because that's the only material durable that can have some transparency. And we work with a glassmaker in Lorraine, in the east of France, where there is all this tradition of pâte de verre and Art Nouveau. And he works essentially with artists. And then for all the production of the work for the non-permanent, so temporary, that's going to be used by the public under the form of a performative installation, we decided to work either with beeswax or soy vegetal wax, and with soap that is also from vegetal origin and can be transparent. And all this work, of course, are not made to last, but they are developed and made for the public to handle them and to transform the installation. And for us, Rupert is a really key point in our practice, because we decided through this residency to experiment with a workshop and working with an educational program. So we work for 2 days with a student of an educational program, and we cast for the first time with soap, soy wax, and also local beeswax. So this was a collaboration with one of the students who work with a local beeswax for her own project, and she kindly find some local beeswax from a farmer in Vilnius. So for us, that was really also interesting to work with a local supplier, local product. We work with a local metal worker. And also for all the pigmentation, we didn't use the thermochromic pigment that we use normally, but we went to some local art shop, and we found the only pigment that they are selling. It's actually pigment that is sold to make Orthodox Russian icon painting. And so we got all this variation of a very strong traditional color that's actually earth pigment from Italia. And so it gives to the casting something extremely condensated and strong, deep in terms of color. So for us, it was really interesting to work here and to experiment for this new step in our career to organize a workshop and the casting. Mm-hmm. And it's something we're going to do in the next exhibition in France, where each time with an exhibition, we're going to organize some workshop with the public, and they're going to cast in the mold, such as the students now in the educational program.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's always interesting to look at a sculptural work and see how the materials are aging and how they behave after some time. And I think it's also interesting to see when we look at the sculptures of some artists who are using some of the, let's say, chemical, artificial materials. It's very challenging for the conservators, and I think it's always it's now becoming a different question for how to preserve some of the objects that are created now by artists such as you, working with organic materials. Sometimes it's also these sculptures can be also kind of fragile in a sense, but maybe they will be also easier to be preserved for different reasons. This is just a kind of side note.
Yeah, actually, we are really aware about it because my family come from architecture design background, so I grew up with this awareness about long-term in material. So we really divide the material for temporary work, such as wax and soap that is made just for the performative installation for a few months, and it's going to be destructed afterwards. And then there is all the work that is made to last. So we really use material that are made to last, such as glass, pâte de verre work, or metal, aluminium casting. And then the VR that is digital.
Also, we have the digital forms for the molds, for the cast. Mm-hmm. So even if the deconstructible, like degradational, like material is like decomposing, like the wax and silicone in this material in like 20 years or 50 years or 100 years, we can still like 3D print the form from the digital file. Yeah. And then create the mold and then cast them again. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's generating itself.
So it's a great idea. So then after even some years, you could use the same mold to kind of recreate or reenact reperform a sculpture you've created. Yeah. It's so amazing to hear you speaking about working with so many different mediums and materials.
Maybe can I add something? Because this direction to go ecological and organic. So as I mentioned before, we used to work with thermochromic pigments because for us it was interesting that the sculpture have their own will. So they were constantly changing of color in relation to the temperature and also the place.
And how does it work?
It works by a step of temperature. So from 0 to 18, it's going to be pink, for instance, and 18 to 24, it goes green. And then after 24, it goes blue. So it's some specific pigment that I used. We import them from San Francisco, and they are used by the Latino community to do the nail varnish. So these are pigments made actually for human, and maybe it's why also it feels so sensual, because we try with some industrial thermochromic pigment that are made for objects, and it was not working at all. So we really work also, for instance, the silicone. It's a medical silicone that is made to be inside the body. So we like to work with material that are made for the human touch, the haptic. But we wanted to continue to have this sculpture that can change and not stay at the same state. And with glass, we're going to develop a research program to try to make thermochromic glass, but it's going to be quite challenging. And we just opened a show at the Rencontre d'Arles in southern France. And we worked with the Institut de la Mer, so it's a sea institute in Nice.
So you started working with the phytoplankton.
Yes, that's right.
It sounds so amazing. Maybe you can tell us how it started and how it goes.
Yes, so as for Rupert, we wanted to work with some organisms that exist in the region of Arles, and it happens that there is a phytoplankton, so it's a microalgae that lives in the mare, the water tank of water sea in the Camargue near Arles. And this seaweed, when it's young, it's green, but it turns progressively to pink, red, orange when it gets mature. And it's what gives the pink color to the pink flamingo, actually, in Camargue. Then with the Institute of the Sea, there were two parts. One part, they made the culture of this microalgae, La Dunalina salina, for us, that are existing in some glass sculpture, blown glass sculpture. And this glass sculpture, we reconstructed in 3D some zooplankton. So there is two kinds of plankton, the phytoplankton that is a plant and the zooplankton that is an animal. They are both microscopic, and so we reconstruct with the biologist the zooplankton, and from this 3D reconstruction, we made some hybrid form with our form, and we created some new shape, and this new shape, then we 3D print in stainless steel a mold, and the glass maker blown the glass inside this 3D print stainless steel. So it was really mixing the biological, working with scientific, with high technology such as stainless steel 3D printing. And then the local craftsmanship also. So it's really interesting for us to work with all these different specialists. And earlier today, a curator asked us how do we consider ourselves more sculpture people or creator, and we recently read a text of at Miguel Abreu Gallery, New York, and it talks a lot about the poet engineer. He make a parallel with the artist of the Italian Renaissance, where, for instance, Leonardo da Vinci was 70% of his sketchbook is actually technical drawing of machine and arm tool, and not painting drawing. And we feel actually quite close to the artist of the Renaissance, where the boundary between the speciality are disappearing, and we enjoy working with different specialists and trying to gather all these speciality together to create some new form and a new collective narrative.
I completely believe in this. I see like the art and techne, arts and techne, it's really somehow visible and exposed in your work, and it's interesting. And I wanted to ask you maybe at this conclusion of our conversation about your dialogue or correspondence that you were doing, also in relation to working interdisciplinary way, when you were doing the work that's going to be presented at a piece here in the vitrine, in this glass box in the center of Vilnius. You were working with participants of the alternative education program here at Rupert, and I think it's very interesting to think about this collaboration. It's amazing that you're also opening your work towards, I mean, to other people to interact. So it's a kind of social sculpture. It's like a sculpture that's open to other people.
For me, I was always interested in this idea of Nicolas Burriot, the relational aesthetics. And also, we recently saw the show of Shimabuku, the Japanese artist, in Monaco's Contemporary Art Museum. And what was interesting was that he brought his own idea to the location of the exhibition, but he's not just pushing his idea onto the geographic location where he's exhibiting, but he actually involves the people who are living in this location. So his the idea that he brought is naturally transformed through the collaboration with the people in that specific space, which I think is more interesting than just showing something that you could show anywhere regardless of the audience. So for me, something to show some artwork is not just to show something that you just brought by yourself regardless of the viewer, but the viewer is always influencing the work or part of the work. So then for me it's very natural or kind of makes sense to collaborate with the people who are only available where we are doing the exhibition. So I feel like this is the first step to free ourselves even from just being a duo, because for me I always was against this individual master painter kind of artist idea, although I love the modernist painter. So I feel like this is already like done. So for me the next step is to go beyond this. So the duo was like the starting point, and then we collaborate with some other people of course, but now it's more like a wider audience. And then for the next VR piece, we're going to program it so the viewers can actually transform the forms inside the VR and the world itself, and then we will be 3D printing some of those shapes to exhibit in the new exhibition as a form. So we'll be casting from those previous forms. So for me it's like a generative artwork that almost has its own life in a way, but we are just kind of part of this artwork, if that makes sense. And then this show at a piece is the first time we are doing this as a materialized format, so I'm very excited to see the result.
Yes, we're all very excited, and also the show will change gradually. Every now and then there will be some changes in the arrangement, so the Vilnius spectators will be able to see some changes.
And also maybe the transformation of the material itself. So before we had like the thermal pigment, but now the beeswax and the soap is probably going to melt with the heat in the glass box to a certain level. So you'll see probably some parts not transform and other parts maybe dripping, or there'll be some kind of transformation, which I'm very excited to see how it's going to become in reality.
Thank you so much. I would like to thank you for this conversation.
Thank you.
And we're going to see your show, No History of Its Own, very soon at APs. So, arigato, merci beaucoup. And je vous souhaite une très belle soirée. And yeah, see you soon.
Thank you.